Stephen.
Hey, Stephen, happy 2021, if that is even possible.
Yeah, 2021 so far, what did somebody say? It was like it's December 43rd. You know, it's yep. not really a new year. I don't know what anybody was expecting, to be honest with you. I don't
know why. Flip that big switch and everything changes.
Yeah, like I don't know why anybody expected that this arbitrary date on the calendar was somehow going to change everyone's fortunes. That's exceptionally unlikely to happen. The change of a numeral in the year doesn't change the circumstances that we went into the new year with. And we've seen things blow up in 2021 that are bigger than anything that blew up in 2020.
Yeah, we're not even 2 weeks in.
Yeah, we're not even 2 weeks in. We've got COVID cases climbing. And then we have the topic we're going to talk about today. We'll get to that in a second. But I want to point out that as of this show, we're not changing our format. But what we're doing is, instead of doing an hour all at once, what we're going to do is do two topics. We're going to do a half hour on each topic, and we're going to separate them so that one episode is released on one day and the other episode is released 2 days later. So this way, twice a week, you'll be getting Stephen and Stephen, whether you like it or not.
No, always leave them wanting more. So, you know, half an hour is a little more bite-sized for everybody as well. If you're carrying us around as a podcast, you know, to sit down and dedicate a whole hour to us, we appreciate the people who do, because there are lots of people who listen right to the end. But, you know, this makes it a little easier on the ears and, you know, allows us to deal with a few more topics. So we'll give it a try. If it works out, yeah, great. If it doesn't work out, then, you know,
we're back to talking to you for an hour.
Then you get what you pay for.
Some people do pay for this.
Yes, they do.
Yes, but
most the rest people, of you freeloaders.
Yeah, most of them are just like that sitcom brother-in-law who just lies on your couch and watches your television.
Oh, that's been me for 9 months.
But it's your own couch.
I know, you know, and you know, like see there's new lockdown sort of things going on in Ontario starting in a couple of days, and I don't see how my life is going to change at all from the way I've lived it since basically March.
Well, I actually don't see how it's going to change the case counts in my.
No, it's not going to change the case counts at all.
Because when you shut down retail, and the case counts keep going up, I look at the math and say, well, obviously the problem wasn't retail because you've removed that from the equation. And so with that gone from the equation and the numbers are still up, that obviously wasn't the factor.
It must be something else.
It must be. It's like in those TV cop dramas where they think they've caught the murderer, the serial murderer. And while he's in jail, somebody else gets killed the exact same way. And they realize this guy this guy can't be the serial murderer because it's still going on while he's in custody. It's the same thing with this lockdown. It's just doing something to do something. I don't think that I think they've lost control of it, and that's because they've lost control of people.
Yeah. I'm just staying home. But fortunately, there's lots to watch on TV if you like politics.
There's a lot to watch on TV, period. If you've got enough of the streaming services, you can become a couch potato with several eyes. But speaking of people losing control of people, let's talk about what happened last week in the U.S. Capitol. Everybody else is talking about it, and it's interesting because I read a thing on Twitter today where somebody said, you chase Hillary's emails for 5 years, but a few days after an insurrection attempt, you say, let's just move on.
Well, then that's the part that really galls me. And I've tweeted about it a couple of times, even before the Republicans were starting to say, like, that was in the past. Biden is this great healer and a peacemaker, and he should be practicing what he preaches about bringing us all together and moving on. And it's like, oh, you lying conservatives, you know, both sides of the border, you know, whenever there's something that another party has done. I mean, geez, we're still talking. We're still hearing about Pierre Trudeau's national energy policy in Alberta. And my God, that was 40 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, some people are still complaining about the Canadian flag, the Pearson pennant. You know, they took away, you know, on Dominion Day. It's like, oh, give it a rest. It's been half a century now. But, you know, something that happened 2 days ago, it's like, no. That's, you know, you got to forgive us for that, because that's what you lefties do. You're all about forgiveness. And it's like, no, not this time, maybe.
Yeah, well, that is the thing, is that they're counting on the fact that you know, people on the liberal side are more forgiving and are so yearning for some kind of unity that they'd be willing to let go. But in this case, I don't see that happening. I think you push, and then you push too far. And this was a push too far.
Yeah, you draw the line at armed insurrection and the attempted overthrow of your government. I think, you know, that's usually a line that most people can agree on. But apparently Republicans, when it's their supporters doing it, this is just a manifestation of their righteous indignation. And it's a groundswell of popular sentiment and it needs to be listened to. And they didn't really mean to do all those sorts of things like, you know, kill a couple of cops and vandalize the Capitol.
Yeah, it was an accident when they dropped a deuce in people's offices.
Yeah,
and exactly. smeared excrement and urine on the walls. Well, they were just blowing off steam.
Well, you know, as you do.
the thing that is interesting to me is that as much as these people were absolute hooligans, there's no question, they use this as an excuse for hooliganism, their sentiment, they actually believe, thanks to Donald Trump, that they are the true American patriots who are trying to defend democracy. They don't realize they've been manipulated to subvert democracy. They really think that they are the people who are fighting for democracy. And this is a problem that's not going to go away. No matter what we do or what they do in the States, this problem of the idea that the election was stolen is cemented in people's minds, and they don't see themselves as vandals. They see themselves as, you know, like the revolutionaries in 1776. And this really points to the fact that America has, I mean, people have talked for a while about two Americas, but now we really see in stark relief the fact that there are two Americas, and each America believes a different set of sentiments. One side believes facts, the other believes what they're being told, and without really questioning the messenger. In fact, they're venerating the messenger. And I don't see how this gets healed. I mean, every day that Biden's in office is going to make these people think that the government has been stolen, and they legitimately think that they are doing good. I mean, this is how some people use religion, for example. They will use religion, they'll cherry pick to sanctify their own bad deeds and believe that, in fact, they are doing good deeds. And I see that as being the case here. And I'm looking at the landscape in the United States and I'm thinking, how on earth other than Donald Trump coming out and saying, look, I was wrong, there's been no election stolen. I don't even think that would stop them at this point, but of course he's not going to do that anyway, so there's no point pondering it. But I don't see how this two Americas is going to resolve itself into an actual United States. Your thoughts?
No, it's going to be very difficult. I mean, in some ways, the United States is still fighting the Civil War. You know, it never settled the issues. You know, that North-South split, which is now, you know, we see it in Canada as well, an urban-rural split. In the United States, you've got a whole layer of race layered on top of that because of slavery. It's, you know, the two Americas, the educated versus the uneducated, and it's not even just necessarily the haves and the have-nots, because if you look out, you know, at the Black Lives Matter protests, a lot of those people don't have a lot of money either. The Trump rioters who are storming the Capitol, I mean, you look at them and they're wearing thousands of dollars worth of combat gear and weaponry. Yeah, there's poor people in there, there's hillbillies, there's people who don't have two nickels to rub together too. But that's not the whole idea. Someone's trying to frame this as a poor versus the establishment kind of thing, kind of like a remake of Les Miserables. And it really isn't. I mean, you've got people, there's famously someone named Jenny Cudd, who arrived, at the riot, at the insurrection, in a private jet. And, you know, she's, you know, she has a business. She received, you know, $200,000 in COVID relief for her business. It's a flower shop, I think, in West Midland. She's done, you know, some of these people were really well-to-do, well-heeled. So, you know, this isn't like the peasants' protest, which is the way some people want to do it. It really is an ideological divide between Americans use their red and blue differently than Canada does. I look at the map and I go like, wait a second, if that was a Canadian map,
very different.
The red would be, but you know, the red states, the Republican states in the United States, they do tend to be the poorest on the whole. But they also tend to be led by Republican governors, places like Kentucky and Tennessee and Alabama, the real southern states where they have the lowest levels of public education funding, the lowest levels of healthcare, the lowest levels, some of them have no minimum wage. So they are poor places, but they aren't necessarily the ones who showed up in Washington to storm the Capitol. A lot of these people were, very famously, the shaman bro, the guy who wearing the horns and the fur. I don't know what it is about the fur. There is more guys there wearing homemade pelts and things. I'm not sure
maybe
what
that American frontiersman idea. They also had pelts on their face. The number of people who were bearded exceeded the numbers who were not.
A lot of beard. That's one of the reasons I could never be a protester. I can't grow a beard. I'm too
disqualified.
As my grandmother said, I'm too fair of cheek. Those people, the guy with the horns, the shaman who is now demanding organic food and got a court order to be fed organic food in prison while he's awaiting trial. He's the son of a New York Supreme Court justice. These are not hillbillies. These are people who have had education in the family, if not themselves. It's a really, really odd problem for the United States, this ideological divide. And it doesn't have a simple pigeonhole that you can put these people in, because it's a very varied group of people with grievances, real and imagined, who I don't know if you could ever make them happy. And Biden, boy, sure got his work cut out for him. There's still people who are angry, at the fact that America elected a black president 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. Now, 12 years ago.
Yeah.
They're still reeling from that and pushing back because they feel like they're a group that is being, treated badly. White Christians are an oppressed minority in the United States. It's like, no, you're not. It doesn't work. It doesn't work anything like that. But, we also have a little bit of that in Canada, too. There's the rural-urban divide. If you looked at the last electoral map, the conservatives couldn't break into places like Toronto or any of the other major urban centers. They are basically a very rural political movement. Not that rural people are dumb, but they have very different issues. They have very different sources of information. They have, their educational levels can be very, very different. You go to Alberta, there's so many charter schools and Christian colleges and other kind of parochial things that don't really teach, the humanities. They don't teach history and comparative religion and all those other things that make you a little bit more savvy consumer of information when it's coming at you fast and furious over the internet or through traditional media. It teaches you, victimhood, because, there's always someone who you can blame your problems on. And you know, they realize, you know, they don't realize it, that the world is a lot more complicated than that. And, you know, a lot of this just isn't personal. It's just is stuff that happens, and it happens to everyone. But, you know, they feel that they're the only ones it's happening to. So the United States, I don't know, they've starved their public education for so long at both the primary level and made it so difficult to get into any kind of other post-secondary educational institutions. They've focused the way they try to get Canadians now to focus on STEM and practical education. Practical education is great. It teaches you trades. It teaches you how to make a living. But, you know, I'm a big believer in the humanities, which actually I think makes you a better person because it teaches you about the world and ideas and philosophies and shades of gray and critical thinking and all those other things that you need not to be duped by demagogues and ideologues who are, you know, are trying very, very consciously to lead you around by the nose.
Yeah, I mean, to your earlier point, the person seen carrying Nancy Pelosi's lectern lives in a 6-bedroom home on a golf course in Florida. The idea that these are just the rabble rising up because of economic disparities. It's just not true.
Yeah, it's not Jean Valjean.
No, there's a lot of people there who are rising up because they believe that they believe in Trump's tax cuts and his attitudes towards the wealthy, which is that the wealthy should be accorded certain privileges. They like that feeling. They like feeling like the elite, which is contradictory to their anti-elite message. But there was a lot of people there who were well-to-do or, you know, middle class. It wasn't because if you really don't have two nickels to rub together, you can't get yourself from out of state to Washington, D.C. and put yourself up in a hotel and feed yourself. You know, you need a certain amount of economic mobility to be able to, even in a pandemic, afford to get yourself from Florida to, you know, Washington, D.C. So it doesn't wash, this idea that this is an uprising of the poor, because there's plenty of poor on the left. That's why so many people on the left support social programs, social supports, because they themselves are poor or they work with the poor. And the poor are, I mean, it's weird because in states like Kansas and other states that are thoroughly red, thoroughly Republican, people are voting against their own best interests. The Republicans have convinced them that they're somehow the supporter of the little guy, when the truth couldn't be further from that. And I just think that it serves the purpose of the wealthy to fuel this discontent, because nothing makes you more powerful than having a mob to wield. I mean, you think about how the GOP has kowtowed to Trump because of their fear of his base. It gives somebody, it gives an individual a tremendous amount of power. And he didn't use that power for good. He used it for evil. He used it to lower taxes. And even when they were talking about COVID relief, he's like, cut payroll taxes. Like, that does absolutely nothing for COVID relief. This is a well-orchestrated, well-manipulated group of people. And I don't think that Trump is smart, but I think that Trump is very wily. And you can see that he understood he didn't need to appeal to broaden his appeal. Well, he did if he wanted to get reelected. But in order to maintain his power, he catered to his base. He didn't soften. He didn't moderate. If anything, he went the other direction. The longer he was in office, he seemed to become more and more irate and more out of control. And I think that there are other forces with money who are helping to fund and support and keep this movement going, because it suits them to have an army that they don't have to pay.
Yeah, and you know, and one of them died this morning. Sheldon Adelson died.
Yes,
and he's reported to have put that they know of, because there's dark money and all the rest too. But they, $75 million into the Trump campaign, And he doesn't have an awful lot in common with the common man, and that money isn't there to improve the lives of his workers or at his various Las Vegas properties or anything. I mean, these are people who have very, very particular agendas. I mean, the Betsy DeVosses of the world, there's all kinds of billionaires who are lining up at one point. But the politicians, like you mentioned, I mean, they're looking at this mass movement we'll call Trumpism. And they're trying to figure out, and this has been the hesitancy, even with all of the terrible things, including the siege on the Capitol building, they're still going, how can I get in front of this thing when Trump's gone? Like, how can I capture that same lightning in a bottle and be master over this crowd? I mean, how do I harness this as a political entity and make it my own? And, and some of them are just thinking, I don't want to be on the wrong side of it. Whoever ends up being the next Trump, I want to make sure I'm on that side, too, because after all, 75 million Americans did vote for Trump. That is, in spite of everything that has happened in the last 4 years, which just boggles my mind. But people are still trying to figure out how they can inherit that legacy on the Republican side. And that's the only reason a few of them are still being hesitant about coming out and strongly denouncing Trump and the activities at the Capitol.
Well, I think we see who's put himself in line to be the next Trump. It's Josh Hawley. I think that he has figured, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. Trump.
I'm going to embrace this.
Yeah, I'm going to embrace this. He's a young, fresh-faced, dynamic guy. He's smarter than Trump. Well, so's a stump. But he's conniving, and he's wily, and he realizes that he's not going to get anywhere in his lust for power if he just toes the line, if he stays with accepted facts and denounces what went on. He's calculating that they're not going to throw him out of Congress for his actions. There certainly are rules that would allow them to deplatform him, so to speak, because he contributed and gave succor to insurrectionists. But I think he's calculating that that's not going to happen to him. He's going to keep his seat. And because he was out there raising his fist in support of the Trump rioters, he's setting himself up as the heir apparent, because Trump has fallen now. See, the thing about, it's kind of like a pack of dogs. They have a leader. But when that leader shows themselves to be weak at all or ill, the dogs just attack and tear it apart, because they don't want to be led by a loser. They want to be led by the strongest of them, the strongest amongst them. And Trump is at this point a loser. He's been cut off from his messaging. So he's no longer the messenger. He's politically wounded. He can't really call for the things that he was calling for before. He's had the wind taken out of his sails. He's been, in a sense, defanged. He doesn't have the influence and authority of the bully pulpit. It certainly won't in a few days, but even at this point in time, it's largely been robbed of him. They're going to look at him and see him as a spent force, but they still have all of this grievance and all of this attitude about America. There was a lot of people who were invading the Capitol, who were saying, this is our America. This is our America. And what they mean by their America is a white.
It means it's not your America.
Yeah. It's a white Christian America, where if other people are here, they are here as guests and should behave as guests. That's where that mindset comes from. So it will be interesting to see. There's still that populism is not going to go away. That level of grievance. Trump is like a magnifying glass. When you've got the sun, beaming down on a nice summer day, it doesn't roast people. But when you take a magnifying glass and concentrate the sun's beams, you can use it to roast ants. You can use it to burn things. And in this metaphor, the sun is the general discontent that exists in the United States. And Trump took a magnifying glass and provided it a focus so that it burned things. And without Trump there, it's the sentiment is still going to be there. It needs leadership and being corralled, because they are sheep. They do need, they're not leaders, they are sheep. They need someone, they need a shepherd. And I think Josh Hawley has set himself up, because not, it's not going to be Ted Cruz.
Oh, God, no.
Ted Cruz is just so unlikable. It's not going to be Ted Cruz. But Josh Hawley, we've not seen the last of him, is my prediction, which is unfortunate. But I can see him as being somebody who takes the mantle of Trumpism and perhaps makes it even more deadly, because he's not stupid. He's not lurching from place to place, and he's not driven solely by narcissism.
Yeah, and that's something, that's a point that I was making on Twitter a little while ago, was that, you know, thank God Trump himself is not very smart. I mean, he's cunning, but he's not very smart. He is essentially very lazy, and he's so narcissistic and short-term goal-oriented that he wasn't able to get really a lot of traction over the last 4 years. I mean, he certainly had some capable enablers. I mean, Mitch McConnell, is a terrible human being, great politician. I mean, he was able to stymie all kinds of things and hold off. And, you know, his policy on judges and stuff, you know, tremendously evil, but tremendously effective. If Trump was himself a little bit more motivated, smart, if some of the people who were leading the right-wing movements, the real extreme ones, were a little smarter, a little more polished, a little more organized, because they've had all the money in the world. They certainly have, this unpaid private army at their beck and call. If America had been through 4 years of a really smart, cunning Trump with a few people around him who are really good at his job, at their jobs, America would be finished, because we've seen how fragile and easily co-opted American democracy is, both with and without violence. It could, the coup could have been successful, or Trump could have established himself in power for as long as he wanted, because he has ignored all the constitutional norms, he's ignored all the legal norms, he's ignored all the rules of civility, and he was getting away with it pretty much with impunity. And again, 75 million people voted for him. That's, that's a pretty good approval rating for someone who's as terrible as he is. But if he had been a little less lazy and a little less venal and self-centered, he could have solidified his position and installed himself essentially as dictator of America. And you can see that there's an appetite for it. So thank God he isn't more motivated, more hardworking, more cunning than he is. The problem is, maybe someone like Hawley comes along and they are a lot of the things that Trump isn't. And if they can again channel focus, the grievance and the actual warm bodies that Trump was able to put together, then that's a real problem. A lot of charismatic movements don't survive the demagogue. When Hitler was gone, Nazism was gone. There's all kinds of leaders who led popular movements, left and right, good and bad. And without that focus, they kind of fall apart. They're still there kind of grumbling in the background, but they go back to being sort of a seething underground movement that you can afford to ignore, or at least you don't have to deal with on a daily basis. But whether or not there's an heir to Trump's throne, which is really being able to harness, this fairly amorphous group of protest groups that are out in the United States right now, remains to be seen. I don't think you're going to go anywhere. I mean, it's still going to be there. I don't think you're going to convince them. I don't think there's anything to make them happy. We've seen that they are completely inoculated against any kind of logic or compassion or decency. They live in their own silos, and you can't even reach them with good news. But they're storming the Capitol because their lives supposedly are terrible. Well, who's been the president for the last 4 years? I mean, who's made their lives terrible? It's been Trump. They were there to reinstall him, the guy who they're complaining government has ruined their lives.
Well, I don't think necessarily that the people who are out there are in support of autocracy. I think that they honestly have been led to believe, and when you're fed a steady diet of this and you refuse to look elsewhere for news sources, they believe that they were restoring democracy by putting the properly elected man back in power. They believe that, that a democracy has been hijacked by Joe Biden. So I don't know that they're, I mean, they're prone to the manipulations of an autocrat. There's no question. They find Trump's autocratic behavior appealing. There's no question. But I don't know that they were there because they wanted to install a dictator and throw democracy out the window. I think they were there because they were, in their belief, democracy was being thrown out the window. So, you know, I'm not sure that these are that America is ready to support an autocracy, but I'm not willing to say it's not either.
No, and you know, I traveled extensively in China for years on business, and you know, made a lot of friends over there, and I would talk to them sometimes about democracy. You know, I was there, you know, not that, you know, long after Tiananmen, and you know, their democratic movement, which was strangled in the cradle. But you know, the Chinese will tell you absolutely that they live in a democracy. They tell you, and you know, of course, it's a terrible autocratic system. Mm-hmm. You know, one party state, and with all the apparatus of a secret police and all the rest of the good stuff that comes with those kinds of dictatorships. But if you speak to educated, well-off Chinese professionals, they will say, yeah, of course we have a democracy. Now, we have a different democracy. We have a Chinese democracy. It is a different democracy than you guys have. And we have a better democracy than you guys have, because look at all the trouble you guys have. You know, there's instability and changes in policy and, you know, all these elections and stuff. You know, we've sort of figured it out. And when I look at the Trump supporters and when I hear them talking about their democracy, I always think about my Chinese friends talking about their democracy and how fundamentally different our understanding of that concept is.
That's an interesting point, and probably a good place for us to bring it in for a landing. A lot to think about, and as we're recording this, there are storm clouds gathering to respond to Trump being impeached and for Biden being inaugurated. There are threats being made on the right, on the radical right, that what we saw last week was only the warm-up. I think that the police and security apparatus will be better prepared this time. But
well, they could hardly be worse prepared.
That's largely true. So while we're recording this, you know, when someone's listening to this, something more may have happened. But I don't think that necessarily will change the essence of what we were talking about today. It's something that, even when these riots go away, the problem of two Americas is not going away. And I'm afraid it's only going to spread further. And, you know, nobody likes to have a neighbor next door who's unstable and violent.
No, you know, it makes it hard to sleep at night.
Yeah. And, you know, it's unseemly when you're watering your lawn to see all the violence spilling out onto theirs. So we're not happy about this. And Canadians, while we sit here watching and act, you know, feeling like, well, thank God we're in Canada, which is true, we will be affected by what goes on there. So it's best to hope for the best, but I am not seeing the best as the outcome, at least in the near short term.
No, they got a ways to go, I think.
Yeah, well, we'll keep our eyes on it. And when we come back for our next podcast, we're going to talk about deplatforming politicians and voices of hate and things of that nature. So stick with us. Listen to the next podcast, which is coming up in 2 days. Or if you're listening after it's been recorded, comes up in 20 seconds. But have a listen to our next Stephen and Stephen, where we discuss deplatforming. Stephen, thank you very much.
Always a pleasure, and we'll be talking to you soon.
All right, and I'm Stephen Kersner. This has been Stephen and Stephen on the Fun Network.